If you want your mind expanded, start at the 5.5 minute mark. If you want to become slowly dumber, start from the beginning.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Gruszka.
Today, we're going to talk about highly sensitive people and see if we are highly sensitive people.
Are we?
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning to ya.
Good morning. Well, it's not morning here, but good morning to you.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Sorry. It is morning for me, as you can tell by my puffiness. You're always so well settled by the time we record, and I'm always so puffy. So I don't know what, maybe one time.
Are you drinking at night? I will say when I drink at night, I wake up much puffier.
Totally. No, I'm not. I'm not. As you saw when you came, I have turned into a lightweight, which is devastating.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Sorry for your loss.
How's your week been?
Yeah. How's your week been? It's that kind of week, eh?
I feel like I influenced your week and you were sick.
Yes, correct. And I was, I think
you
I'm
were
just
sick.
A little
I was stressed out.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Tell us about it. Tell us about your, are you feeling better?
I'm getting there. You can hear my congestion. It was more than anything. I was just like exhausted. And when you have kids, like you don't, there's like no room to be exhausted.
Totally.
No time. There's no sleeping time. And I'm not sleeping well at night. I think my hormones are starting to shift around and I'm like, I keep waking up all the time. All the time. Yeah.
I think that's early. I mean, not that I'm a gynecologist.
Or you could be.
Or any kind of doctor, actually.
What does that even mean? You could be.
Do you have a cringe or a delight for us, or is it just
I do. I have a cringe. I have a cringe that's not pleasant. And I feel like you once said, I'm always having delights, and I feel like I'm always bringing cringe to the table. And that
that's
you're
what I like
actually
about you.
But I think that you're bringing more delight, and I want to bring delight because I feel lots of delight.
Delight is wonderful, but sometimes cringe is more entertaining.
My cringe is neither entertaining nor enjoyable. It's more
okay,
like
hit us
a,
with it.
It's like a walk around in my head. It kind of gives you insight into the way I secretly function, and it's kind of a it's a anti. I can't. I'm just gonna share. So my daughter.
The buildup is real.
Okay, so all three of my kids are in three different schools, which makes that really easy. You know what I mean? Like that should make your life easier when all three go to three different locations at three different times. Totally. Anyway, so I drop my oldest school is across from my youngest school, and I drop off my youngest, and my oldest has already been in school for like 2 hours at this point. And I'm just, the way you can go around, I sort of look down into the back of my oldest middle school and I look down and there are like tons and like not like one cop. There are a bunch of cops and lights on.
Oh.
Okay. All around.
Wait,
the back
in the and, parking lot?
In the parking lot. And
of her middle school.
Of her middle school. In the back. Throngs of kids are coming out in a line, like in a line of like three people walking. It didn't look super organized. Nobody looked panicked, but in my bizarre brain, I immediately panic. So I cut immediately. I'm like, I have to get to the school, like immediately. And right. So I cut over three lanes of traffic and to get scoot around. And as I'm doing this, I call my husband so that he can jump in his car and head to the front of the building. I'm like fully, first of all, I will say I tend to panic in emergency situations and get paralyzed. Hey, check out our episode on flight or fight or flight or freeze. I definitely freeze in emergencies. I like mapped out everything in my mind. I called my husband who didn't answer to tell him to get in his car and drive around to the front so that we could grab her at either end. He doesn't answer. I immediately call her. It goes right to voicemail. I was like, oh my God, this is the worst. Even though they're not allowed to have their phones, so they're often shut off. And then I was like, oh my God, I call my friend whose daughter is also in the school. I said, I just drive by. I'm weaving through the shopping center to try to enter through the back of the school. I said, I saw cops. I saw them escorting them out. I haven't heard a word about anything. Can you call your daughter and see if she answers? She is on the way to see her ailing mother, pulls over to call her own child. I'm zooming through like at high speed through our shopping center so I can get to this like secret back tunnel that can lead me through to the thing. And as I'm approaching the high school, which will get me back to the tunnel, I see more cops and I see the kids being escorted to the high school. And I'm like, oh my God. And then I think, I don't know why now is the first time I think to call the middle school. So I'm like about to drive through a throng of children to find my own child. And I call the middle school and I'm like, hey, as I'm driving, I see a bunch of cops and I see a bunch of kids leaving. I just want to make sure everything's okay. And the woman says, oh yeah, they're just escorting the eighth graders. My daughter's in seventh grade, over to the high school to see the play.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. So immediately, so I'm like, okay, I'm so relieved, but then I like become infuriated. I'm by myself in my dirty minivan. Like, and then I'm like enraged. Like, why was my first thought when I saw cop cars at my baby girl's school that there was an active shooter? First thought. What was my friend's first thought when I called her and said, I saw police and they're leaving the school, active shooter. And totally. Then I thought, am I being crazy? And then I talked to a couple other people and they said that would have been my first thought.
100%.
And I thought, what, pardon my French, but what fucking country are we living in that this is a reality that I have to think that way and think and have my husband go to the front so that I can go to the back? Like, what, why should this even be an issue when I send my babies into school? And you know, I had an evacuation with my youngest because he was at a Jewish synagogue and that was frightening and scary and horrible. Right. Like, why is this a reality? Right. And it made me really angry. Not to mention I had been sick all week and this caused my adrenaline to like, I mean, skyrocket. And then I crashed. I mean, skyrocket, because I was ready to like go into the building screaming so that she could go out the front.
I kind of wish you had just gone into the building screaming as they were escorting these eighth graders to watch
to go play. See like Les Mis at the high school or something.
They're like, oh, look at this character has come into our school.
As they're like arresting me and I'm like, Evie, you okay? Hey, baby girl, you all right over there?
You're speeding past cop cars. You're driving through crowds of kids in front of cops.
Yeah, totally. And then I say to my friend, if I see her daughter, I'll grab her and throw her in the car. I'm envisioning
you're
like
kidnapping children,
piling kids into my car. Like, whoever, just get in. We'll call your parents. Come on. Right? Like, some life's, I'm the first person on the scene. Anyway, it enraged me. I was like, am I insane? But then it was all these feelings. And then I can tell you that adrenaline crash from that, I felt like sick after because my body.
I bet.
Okay, time to die.
100%. I mean, I'm so with you. I, you know, either of them call in the middle of the day. I could be in deep in a session. I will stop the person and be like, I have to answer this phone. What if it's the last time they're calling? I mean,
oh my God.
That is, I know.
It's horrible though.
That is the insanity of.
Gun control.
Oh my God.
Guns. It's America. Sorry. We need stricter.
Well, it's like this so people can hunt and defend themselves against the police and so that we can ignore mental health.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
I mean, nobody else has this issue. The proof is in the pudding. No other place has this issue.
Yeah. It's disgusting. Well, disgusting. That's beyond cringe. That
I know. Disgusting. It wasn't even like a cute cringe. Like my nail broke off in the middle of my workout.
Well, it's okay. I'll go there. Don't worry. Okay, good, will, as always, make it petty.
Great. So can you lighten up? Because that's some heavy shit to come back from.
I mean, my cringe is so stupid.
No, that's great. I really want that.
I've decided that I am one of those people who puts International Delight coffee creamer in my coffee.
Oh, that is cringy.
After 10 years of drinking my Americanos black, which, you know, is just healthier for your blood sugar in the morning. So you're not jamming sugar into your system. And then I don't know what happened, Bean. Overnight, I became an International Delight lover.
Also, it's and one now. Thing- to be black, to drink it black, but to go from that, like maybe a splash of oat milk. I mean, do some transition there. How did you jump from black to International Delight? Is it flavored?
Like, yeah, it's French vanilla.
Oh no, Bean. Oh my gosh. You made it worse.
But I know.
What's it made of?
I tried one time to buy the caramel one and it was not like the French vanilla. Oh, only the French vanilla, International Delight, the blue one. Is only the only one.
What's it made of?
I might become one of those people that buys this at Costco.
That's how you make it?
What is it made of? That's the cringe part. I can't even pronounce what it's made of.
Oh, no. It's not dairy. No. Is it dairy? Or it's like fake?
I think stuff. It has some dairy in it.
Interesting.
I don't know. I'm not even supposed to drink dairy. I can't tell you what's going on. I don't know what happened. I think I decided one morning I deserve a little treat in the mornings. Well, I'm going to try this. Oh, I know what happened. I went home for Thanksgiving. I stayed at my aunt and uncle's house. My aunt is an international delight connoisseur. She got every flavor in there.
Wow, fancy. Yeah. She fancy.
And I think I like cinnamon dolce'd it one day or like cinnamon bun roll something. And it changed me forever. And now I'm an international delight drinker.
Wow. And mazel. So I don't know how I feel cringed out about it, but you know what?
Yeah.
What you're trying to tell me is that it brings you delight. So I'm going to say it's delightful.
That's my delight. Yeah.
I'm going to say now I will allow it. If it brings you delight, it is a delight.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you. Mm-hmm. My other cringe is that I haven't gone to work out once in the last week and a half.
Me either. Whatever.
So, whatever hydrogenated carbon plus no workout is the way to go.
It is. I think it's working for you.
Hydrogenated carbon? Hydrogenated oil, I think is what I was trying to say.
I got it.
Well, Bean, what do you think we stop bullshitting and we get into the topic of today's episode?
Yeah, which I feel like we've covered a lot already.
That's true. I think, you know, if people want to start paying attention, we should start putting in our show notes the minute marker where they can actually fast forward to get to the point. Yeah, to learn. If you want to learn... It's happening now.
If you want your mind expanded, start at the 5.5 minute mark. If you want to become slowly dumber, start from the beginning. If you want to lose a few brain cells, join us up top.
It's a pick your own adventure type of situation.
Which is really fun. Anyway.
All right. Okay. So today's topic is highly sensitive people. And... why do we want to talk about this today? Our why?
Well, I have a big why. I would imagine your big why would be because you're a highly sensitive person. I felt like I've always been on the cusp, but I have a sister who is a very highly sensitive person. And I also have a daughter who is a very highly sensitive person. So it carries big meaning for me in lots of ways.
I learned when I took the test that we're about to tell you guys about that I am not a highly sensitive person, according to the test.
Right, according to the test. But listen,
it also, highly sensitive people is a very specific concept that has to do with how we react to our environment and the stimuli around us. I think I react to other people's energy and emotions very deeply, which is why I always put myself in that category. But I'm learning that if you're talking about highly sensitive people from a like pure linear psychology today standpoint, it's one bucket. If you expand it to a spiritual meaning, then it has more to it than that.
Perhaps then I'm the spiritual type of highly sensitive.
Yes, I think so. I want to hear what you got on your test.
All right, let's link in the notes to the test. I mean, I don't think this was anything scientific. It was just like a little scientific, but I
wouldn't. Are you kidding? What's the website?
It's like usmagazine.com.
Highlysensitiveperson.com. I think that sounds pretty official.
Definitely. Is it notarized?
Don't know about you. Okay. So highly sensitive person is someone who feels emotions and sensations more intensely than others. They also tend to be empathetic and sensitive to physical sensitive to physical sensations. So highly sensitive person is actually a term that was developed by a psychologist named Elaine Aron in the 90s, A-R-O-N.
Correct.
And she defines the highly sensitive person as someone who has a sensitive nervous system and is aware of subtleties in his or her surroundings and is more easily overwhelmed when in a highly stimulating environment. So in this frame, a highly sensitive person, it's about your physical ability to sense a change in your environment and then your reaction to that change in your environment. So knowing that, would you say you're a highly sensitive person?
A little bit. I mean, there's a lot of nuance. Yeah. There's a lot of nuance with highly sensitive people that they can see like very minor shifts.
Yeah.
Are highly aware of everything going on. And I don't think that I am always aware of the, like, the tiny, tiny ones, but I feel more in an energetic sense that I'm highly sensitive. Call it spiritual or whatever. I can feel the energy shift in a room. I can feel the energy when I walk into a room. I couldn't pinpoint where it's coming from necessarily, but I can feel it.
Yeah.
I don't know what that defines me as.
That's the category I fall into too, which I think in like our modern terminology is empath, which is sensing energy or emotions coming from people. But I think that this is very specific. What I learned about this was when I married TJ and when he would truly react to loud noises around us, like in a really profound way. If the kids were all, you know, running and playing, his whole ability to remain like centered and in his body would go away. Like you would just lose him. He couldn't focus. He would get easily aggravated and agitated. And I used to at first be like, dude, just be patient. They're kids. Right. It's so cute. Like it's such a judgmental thing we have about. And then we both started to learn about HSPs because he was looking into it for our youngest, his youngest. And then read this book by Elaine and realized, oh, this is actually your nervous system not being able to like you're overstimulated more easily than I'm overstimulated by loud noises, by crowded places, by, you know, a lot going on where your ability to take it in and process it gets like over it, like overrides your system.
Yeah. My sister has to actually physically cover her ears whenever sirens go by when we're outside. She doesn't let it like interfere with her life tremendously, but if we're walking, she'll have to literally cover. She's almost 45. It's like but she has to cover. She can't, it's just too overwhelming for her. A lot of physical sensations.
Yeah. It's so important to know that I don't know. It's like with anything, like when you fall into a category, then you can learn more about it. It's like when I started to learn about ADHD, I was like, oh, I get myself. And I also know what to do to regulate myself. But I think if you're curious, like, do I fall into a highly sensitive person category? There are some things that psychologists say are pretty common to highly sensitive people. So some of those things are avoiding TV shows or movies that are violent. That's me for sure.
That's my mom.
Oh, I love this. Finding the beauty in almost anything, whether it's art or nature.
Oh, I love that.
The most common one, feeling overwhelmed by noises, bright lights, and uncomfortable clothes.
My sister, my daughter.
That's a key giveaway. Like when, you know, I think that my youngest, like he didn't want to put on certain things unless they were really soft.
Right.
Which I'm learning is a part of this like sensory experience that he's having. Feeling anxious. Feeling the need for downtime, and then having a rich inner life.
Oh, I love that.
What does that mean to you? Like to me, that means just that you're imaginative and you're able to be in your own space.
Yes.
And that there's so much going on in there. You don't need the external.
And that you enjoy the way you think, sort of. Like I am learning my middle one, who I think is the highly sensitive one, is she's so inquisitive. Because I think there are so many things going on in her mind at once. Like she'll just start asking tons of questions about things that she wants to know about. Not that all children don't do that, but you can see like what's happening in there.
Yeah, totally. So I think that like when we look at it from that standpoint, it allows us to really support the people in our lives or ourselves that are highly sensitive people. But I said that if you want to know more, we took a test, Bean and I, before the episode today. So I want to talk about what's in this test. It's actually on this highlysensitiveperson.com, which is by Elaine Aron.
Oh, it is? Oh, okay.
Yes, the author of The Highly Sensitive Person, which is, again, one of the first people to really talk about this and coin this term. So she has this test on her site, and the instructions are, and we'll link to the test in the show notes, depending on how many of these statements are true to you, if you get over 14, then you definitely fall in the highly sensitive person category. So here are some of the questions, and you guys can run through it for yourselves. One, I'm easily overwhelmed by strong sensory input. Two, I seem to be aware of subtleties in my environment. Other people's moods affect me. Big time for me.
Big time for me.
I tend to be very sensitive to pain. Big time for me.
Not you? Me.
No. I find myself needing All right. I find myself needing to withdraw during busy days into bed or a darkened room where I can have privacy and relief from a situation. Next one, I'm particularly sensitive to the effects of caffeine. I am not.
I could drink like 40 pounds.
Totally. I'm easily overwhelmed by things like bright lights, strong smells, coarse fabrics, or sirens close by. I have a rich, complex inner life. I'm going to just do a couple more. Changes in my life shake me up. I make it a high priority to arrange my life to avoid upsetting or overwhelming situations. And then when I was a child, my parents or teachers seemed to see me as sensitive or shy. So these are some. I think I read you about half. So you took the test. What did you get?
I got a shockingly low 8.
Me? Oh, you got an 8. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a 12.
Ooh,
and
much closer.
I think that that's because a lot of the sensory elements of being a highly sensitive person don't apply to us. So that's why I'm saying there's a distinction between this being a sensory thing and what we think of as being sensitive, which is emotionally open and emotionally receiving information.
So would you say that you are not then a highly sensitive person then?
Did you think you were prior to this?
And now you're like,
no,
guessing?
Because I had read this book and I had like, I live with TJ who is an HSP. Right. I know for a fact I can handle a lot of stimuli without getting overwhelmed. Like I'm okay with chaos. I did crisis management. I don't get overwhelmed very easily.
But wait, let me throw a little wrench in your observation there. I did actually, prior to this, because my sister is very educated on this topic because she is diagnosed as that and has really read up on it. And I texted her shortly before this episode to ask her what she thought about me, because I always think like I sort of am, but I'm sort of not. It's like, so I feel like I fall somewhere in the middle. And she said she does think I am, but she thinks that I'm a high sensation seeking, highly sensitive person. And she said,
what does that
mean? I'll tell you in 2 seconds. And she said that she wouldn't necessarily assume it about me if I wasn't already, we didn't know that there was some genetic predisposition. We think my mother is, my sister definitely is, my daughter is, you know, so it's definitely in, definitely in my family. So she, because I like a lot of the, I like the loud noises. I like the loud music. Yes. I like the wild roller coasters. I was a wild child growing up. I was very shy though as a young child. I had a lot of separation anxiety, a lot of fear of what if, what if, what if.
Totally.
But now, even now, like I just like, I'm a high sensation seeking. I like, but I said to my sister, I think I just like to have fun. Like, I don't know if that's high sensation seeking. She said, but maybe that's part of it, that like I'm constantly seeking fun to feel stimulated.
Oh, so there's another side of the HSP spectrum where instead of it overwhelming you, because you have such ability to sense, you seek it. To sort like of. Feel alive.
Sort of, because you can feel it so well. You know what I mean?
That's interesting.
And I definitely am. I mean, I wouldn't call myself a true empath. I don't feel the feelings, but I am very sensitive to others' emotions, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why the like distinguishing from a psychological standpoint, empath and HSP, they feel very, very different. I think we'll get into it in a minute.
I like, think it's
really what that means to me. Yeah. But I think that just right now, if we're just keeping this about like the psychological aspects, then this is different than being an empath. So the question might be coming up, which did for me, when you learn about highly sensitive people, is then what's the difference between that and autism or being on the autism spectrum, since that's also has a lot of sensory elements to it. And so I looked into it, and basically from, you know, what I found, the difference is that highly sensitive people are focused on the sensory experience only. Like that's what makes them highly sensitive people.
Right.
Whereas in autism, that's one part of it. There are other parts
of elements,
you know, being on the autism spectrum, which, by the way, it's also a spectrum. So there's not one way of looking at autism, which also has to do with struggling with understanding nonverbal cues, having repetitive behaviors, having intense focus on specific interests. Those are some things right. that when you think about the autism spectrum are also part of it. So that's the difference, is that highly sensitive people, it's just about their response to the external, like being overly stimulated, whereas autism has more complexity to it than that.
Do you think there's a spectrum though for highly sensitive people? Because I even Absolutely. Said, yeah, that I think like I'm slightly highly sensitive
yeah.
in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my dear, amazing friend Alok has taught me in every single way, nothing is binary. Correct. And we want it to be this or that, but it's not. Like that's everything true. Is on the spectrum. And so that's, I agree. I think I'm highly sensitive in some ways. Like I can't watch scary or violent things at all. I don't like it.
Right. I'm fine.
Yeah. Other people's moods affect me deeply.
Me too.
But I can deal with loud noises. I can deal with chaos. Right. I love big cities, you know, in a way TJ does not. So there's, I don't think I'm as sensitive as some. Our producer just said she took the test and she scored a 19.
Yeah, she did. She blew us out of the water.
Which is interesting because she always has to be, so our producer Anais is my baby cousin, by the way. I don't know if we've ever made that clear. Maybe I think so.
I don't know.
She's basically my sister. I like have been with this child since she was born. She's not a child anymore. And she always has had to have like something in her hand to rub, like whether it's a blanket or a stuffed animal or a piece of cloth, because it's part of the sensory experience for her. And she was saying that she just saw on Good Morning America or something that lots of people still sleep with some kind of stuffed animal or something that gives them that sensory experience, even adults.
Adults.
Which I think is another sign of being a highly sensitive person, is like needing that sensory experience. I did ask the Googles, ooh, what percentage of adults fall into this category of yeah. HSP? What
Great
do you
question.
Think? Thank you.
I don't know. I feel like it could be shocking in either direction. I feel like it could be way more than I think, but it could also be like a very small number.
Use your intuition.
Going to go with 32%.
15 to 20% of right. people in the U.S. Self-categorize as highly sensitive people, which is still a large number of people.
That's a lot, right? Don't you think?
Yeah, I wonder if we confuse that with introversion and extroversion.
And I think this could be a great time to go into the difference between that and being an empath, because truly, yeah. I don't really know the answer.
Yeah. So when you were young, or in general, have you ever been called too sensitive?
Well, a lot of my life, I was.
So what did that mean when people were calling you that?
I think I used to. It's shifted actually as I've gotten older in a lot of ways. But I used to cry very easily, like very easily. Not in a like, wow, that didn't happen. But anything, a happy thing happened, a sad thing happened, I would just automatically start crying. My mother has the same thing.
So it was the emotional response that
I think it was more of an emotional response that,
yeah,
that caused that. I don't think people would say that now.
Kindly.
I feel like it was more of an,
or was it negative?
I mean, it's usually said in a more negative way, but I don't like. Probably in a more negative way. That's my answer.
Yeah. 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 That's my experience of it in general. Like
if you're too anything.
Well, my experience of it is that too sensitive is used as such a weapon to put people down.
Especially women.
Because what is it trying to say? Like you're not strong enough.
Right.
You don't have the grit. You don't have the resilience. You don't have the courage. So you're too sensitive, which it enrages me. Because those things are not one and the same. You can be a highly sensing person
right.
in this world and also be hugely courageous and right. make huge impact on the world have a lot of resilience.
I bet a lot of the people who have made huge impact in the world are highly sensitive people who were so hyper aware of their surroundings and the inadequacies that existed that they right. fought for something that they really believed in.
That's so true. Like you have to be
hyper
able to sense
right.
what is going on to create change. I was called too sensitive a lot too. And what I would hear a lot was like, you take things too personally, which I still can fight with in my own mind, is like not taking things on as my own.
Is that sensitive? Do you think of that as sensitivity though, or that's just you tend to take things too personally?
Yeah, I think that can fall in that category. I don't know. And maybe that's a way of villainizing being sensitive too, is like, I also think that's a form of gaslighting people, because like sometimes we are being dismissive of people, we are neglectful, we are mean, and then when they want to say something about it, we gaslight them into saying, oh, why are you taking this so personally? And it's like, well, because you were being an a-hole.
Right. But you have even also said yourself that it's almost rarely about you.
It's never about you.
It's never.
I've learned that.
Right.
But I did not know that in my teens and 20s. How would right? you? So I definitely think I turned it into it being about me. And this is why I think it's related. I think that for me being highly sensitive, like we've talked about, is me being able to sense other people's energy shift
right.
and emotion. And so when I can, on a nonverbal level, sense that something about you shifts in my presence, if I have the part of me that's not healed that says I'm not enough,
right.
I will take that thing I'm sensing and make it about me and make it about not being enough. So that's how it was connected. And I guarantee, I challenge a lot of you to think about that. If you take a lot of things personally, there is a part of you that's asking to be healed, that wants to make the thing you're sensing about you. And this is where I think it's really important to differentiate. Yes, you are sensing things accurately. Yes, the other person is distant or
right.
being neglectful in that moment or being hurtful. You are sensing that accurately. I want us to stop gaslighting ourselves.
Agreed.
And it has nothing to do with you. Both of those things are true simultaneously. So how beautiful would it be if we lived in a world where we didn't gaslight each other because we were so emotionally intelligent about our own stuff that right. if I said to you, Bean, you feel off to me today, you were able to say, yeah, I'm off because X, Y, and Z happened. Instead of, I don't know what you're talking about. And then me feeling like, uh-oh, I'm crazy.
Right.
Or I'm not getting this right. Or this is about me somehow and she doesn't want to talk to me about it.
I think we also do this a lot with children because we don't want to let them in that anything's wrong and we want it to be all yeah. sunshine and rainbows. So often like,
yes.
And I've done this a lot with my own kids, but I did read something yeah. about it. So I've been working on it, that if you consistently, if your child is picking up, and again, my middle child is so highly sensitive that she can sense
yeah.
even the most like mild shift in my personality. You yeah. know, even if I think I'm all smiles and everything, she can sense it and she'll often ask me. And for a long time, it would always be like, oh, baby, I'm just tired, or oh, whatever, yeah. it's this or that. But then they start to learn that they know something is actually happening, and then they stop trusting themselves
totally.
Because they're like, oh, 100%. But she just said she's tired. So I did just read something that said, especially for a child who's asking like that, to answer them honestly, it doesn't have to be in depth. Like you don't have to be like, I'm mad at your dad, because you can just say, oh, somebody said something to me earlier and I'm really thinking about it. And it's kind of on my yeah. mind right now. Thanks for worrying about me, but I'm going to like handle this on my own kind of thing. But thanks yeah, for asking.
Exactly.
So that she exactly. feels confident in the future, not always wondering, oh my God, is that person mad at me? Is this person mad at me? Right? Because yeah. she then assumes if I say, oh, it's fine, nothing, she then starts to think, is it me? Did I do something?
Yeah.
Did I upset 100%. You? Right?
100%. Or am I crazy? Like I clearly can't perceive
right.
things accurately.
Right.
That's why, I mean, people ask me, how did it take you? Not how, but like it took you until your 40s, really, yeah. or late 30s to go do what you do. And it's because adore my mom. She did everything she could to make us okay
of
as
course.
An immigrant and a single parent.
Yeah.
And everything was about being positive all the time.
Oh,
even
no.
when I
do
could
that.
Sense that stuff was wrong, she'd be like, everything's great. And so for a long time, I'd be like, I don't understand. Like,
right.
so either I don't know how to sense accurately, or, you know, you don't think the person's lying to you, and she's not trying to, she's trying to be positive. But that's what I'm saying about this other ability we have to reach out this energetic tentacle and sense things. And how if that gets shut down, to your point, we learn not to trust ourselves.
Right.
And I think, I mean, I know that that is also a tool that's been used in oppressive situations.
Such
that is
as?
Like colonialism is an important example of how people were taught that sensing is not okay. I really think you're too sensitive still comes from some of our colonialism hangover. Yeah. Because sensing that something is not right, sensing that, oh, your intention is not what you're saying it is.
Right.
All of a sudden, we're going to lose our culture, our autonomy, our land.
Right.
Like, if you stay sensing, then you're more aware of what's about to happen to you.
Right.
And then you're more apt to rebel against it or fight against it.
Right.
So, of course, being sensitive has to be villainized so that we aren't sensing and we're just following. Like, people, it's like, rather than trusting what we're sensing, we just have to believe what other people are telling us. Right. And if we do that, then we'll stay in our sleepwalk and we'll follow them off a cliff.
I think that still is existing. I mean,
yeah, that's what I said. I think we're still in the hangover. I mean, not.
I wouldn't even say hangover. Obvious. I'd say we're still in the thick of it. Yeah.
We're in the thick of it. And I just think that it's so good for us to realize that the word sensitive is villainized for a reason.
And I think it was great what you referenced earlier about our producer was watching a show about these adults who are sleeping with stuffed animals and finding comfort in this, because I think it's bringing this, I feel like the younger generations, I hate saying that because I feel like I'm the younger generation, but they are bringing more awareness to all types of behaviors and whatnot, just like being a highly sensitive person. And I think the more it's normalized and talked about on a huge news station, for example, the more that people will hopefully move away from that, just shut it down and follow me blindly. People will be like, oh, that's like, me. Oh, that's how
that's
I feel.
Me.
Right.
Yeah.
Even
and
this
that's
podcast,
okay.
I hope somebody says, oh, that is my kid. I'm not going to keep telling them, you know, everything's fine.
Yeah. And what are the benefits of being a highly sensing person? Agreed. Now we're moving out of, by the way, highly sensitive person, but this still counts.
Yeah.
Highly sensitive person, but also a highly sensing person, which is the category I think you and I fall into.
I don't really know much about it. So I would love to hear about it.
So again, I mean, I think we just said it. I think it's being able to perceive shifts in energy and mood and emotion around us and being deeply aware of what's happening when those things shift.
You can pinpoint, though, which is why I would label you a highly sensitive person before I would label myself. I can feel it. I can sense it, but I can't like narrow it down. You know what I mean? I know the general sense of what's happening that somebody next to me might not realize, but I don't know like where it's going to go or where it's coming from or how it was caused. I can just tell it's there.
Yeah. But again, I just want to make sure we're clear.
Yeah.
Highly sensitive person is about overstimulation to external stimuli. The differentiation I'm making is that a highly sensing person,
okay,
like someone who can sense things,
right?
It's not about getting overstimulated. It's just about having this other information stream available to you very readily, which is the change in energy or emotion from the person across from you.
I like
so
it.
So I don't think I'm a highly sensitive person. Got I just it. Want to make that clear. I don't get overstimulated by external things. Okay. I don't get overwhelmed.
Unless you're high sensation seeking and you like the stimulation.
Maybe.
Sister said, like, you're always busy. You keep yourself super busy. You like loud music. Like, I like these like hyper sensations almost.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just wanted to make that distinction because I think everything we're talking about now is about sensing and not
correct.
Not the psychological HSP. So what did you ask me? What does that look like for me?
I forget what I asked you. Did I ask you that you were going to tell me
something?
You
were like, well, you really you said, I want to learn from you.
About what a highly sensing being is, not necessarily a highly sensitive person.
Yeah. So my theory is that we are all naturally born highly sensing beings. All of us.
Right.
And when we are young, very young, we use that ability to understand the world around us. Like if you watch a baby out in the world with its parent, you can tell the difference in its energy when it's upset and crying, if the parent is frazzled or if the parent is calm.
Absolutely.
Totally different things. So that baby is clearly sensing an energy. This is a nonverbal phase of our lives. We can sense, something is off here. So I'm going to, my energy is going to react to that, right? We are all born that way. That ability to sense gets pulled out of us over time by lots of things. One, our need for care and belonging with our parents. So if our parents tell us, no, you're sensing wrong, then we're going to abandon our sensing, right? We're going to choose their form of sensing or of looking at the world to have belonging with them. Then to our feel friends. Safe.
It's survival. You do what your parents do so that you can stay alive.
Then we grow up. Our friends, same thing. I need belonging. So now I'm going to abandon what I'm sensing. You know, this is also about intuition. But
what?
I'm going to abandon what I'm knowing for that. Then our culture. We've said this a million times on this show. We are taught and trained to honor external information as true and internal information as woo-woo. So we then learn that what we're sensing on the inside from our culture, from the media, from the capitalistic world we live in, all of it, that we don't actually know. We need someone else to tell us. So we are all highly sensing beings. We have a very intuitive sense. We know what's going on, but we've just been trained to ignore it. So what does it look like when you reunite with it or you turn it back on? It's that very first hit, that very first feeling you get, honoring it as truth. Now, when we put it through the filter of, is this about me? It gets distorted.
Yeah.
And then it's not truth anymore. But if I'm looking at you, I mean, you do this with me all the time. I'll text you and you'll be like, something's off. Right? And that is you just honoring, I know this.
Yeah.
Like, you might not even be in the headspace where you're willing to talk about it, but I know it and I can sense it. So I think that, like, to answer your question, we all have this capability. It's just about, like, that first thought, that first feeling, learning how to trust that first thought and that first feeling, A, and then B, not making it about us so that it doesn't get distorted and all, you know, then all of a sudden we need to do something about it that complicates the situation.
Right. Just recognizing it, which is one of your tips always. Just noticing it.
Yeah. So what it looks like for me is, like, I can be with someone and all of a sudden I'm just, like, sad. And I have to recognize, oh, but you weren't sad an hour ago. So what's going on? Oh, you're sensing this sadness in this person and you don't have a good boundary.
Right.
So you're allowing this sadness into the vessel that is you. And that is now getting confused and complicated as being yours.
So that is an empath by definition.
Then. Yes. Right.
So I think this also might be a great time to differentiate between an empath and a highly sensitive person.
An empath is someone who can sense other people's emotions so deeply that it can feel like your own emotion.
Right. I think that they're often highly sensitive people, I would imagine, are often empaths. Again, two close examples to me are absolute empaths.
You know what just occurred to me? Like, you know how we said everything's on a spectrum?
Yeah.
And we talked about the difference between highly sensitive people and autism.
Yeah.
And how what I said is that being a highly sensitive person is one of the aspects of autism.
Yes.
But there's all these other aspects. So if you put that over here on the right side of the spectrum, and then you put highly sensitive person slightly to the left, maybe you put empath slightly to the left of that. So being sensitive to other people's moods is one aspect of being a highly sensitive person, but there's all these sensory things that also exist that with a highly with sensitive it. Person that empaths may not have.
But then are they not highly sensitive people, or they are?
They may not be fully as highly sensitive. Like, that's what I'm saying. It's on
as
a spectrum.
A technical HSP.
Right. But they've got some aspects of it. I think we just invented a spectrum that makes sense.
We did?
I think we should draw it.
I want to. I was watching your fingers and envisioning it. Yes, it totally does make sense. I still feel like for me, there's so much overlap, which, again, because this is all a spectrum, all of these spectrums overlap. But I'm having trouble in my own mind teasing apart, like, well, where does this one fall? I'm trying to think of course. I'm always thinking of my kids and where they fall on these lines and these spectrums and myself.
Yeah. Well, in order to figure out how to best support them. So maybe we should talk 100%. About what are some things you can do if you feel like you fall into either a highly sensitive person or an empath category.
Yes, I was very interested to hear your take on it, mostly for my daughter, because I want to support her in the best way I can.
Okay. So let's start with being a highly sensitive person. So again, this is being aware and affected by other people's moods, plus having a overstimulation to extra outside sensory experiences, stimuli. So the first thing, and a lot of psychologists say this, is you need to give yourself adequate downtime. You're not going to be the kind of person who can just like go from one thing to the next, the next, the next without taking some pause, taking some alone time to one, bring your nervous system down,
right,
and get yourself back to regulated. So be alone, take breaks, get away from loud noises or lights, practice an exercise that's self-soothing. One that I love is just like literally if you put your two fingers right above your nose and just go along your brow line, like you're just massaging your face down to your chin, just over and over again. This actually is proven to bring your nervous system down. You're just tracing from the top bridge of your nose along your brow line down to your chin, just over and over again, just telling your nervous system, I'm here, we can calm down.
I did read, I don't know if this is correct, but I did read shortly before this that they highly sensitive people also have I don't know what the word would be. They're just, they feel music on a deeper level. It's very comforting for their nervous system. So I think another great tip, which I often suggest for all of my kids, is put on a song you really like that you feel in your soul to calm down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Listen to calming music or listen to something that makes you feel good.
Yes. Did you read that or did I say that up front?
No, I was just reading some stuff up front, up top.
Well, I also said it. Thanks for making it.
well, it was a great point. Thanks for making it.
The other thing psychologists recommend when you're in HSP is to just really try to manage your environment as much as possible without feeling like you have to really control. But like, what does your home and your workspace have in it that's conducive to both comfort and productivity? So it might mean that like you have to work in a space where the lights aren't so bright, or you're able to go study or read or work in a space that's just quieter. You like open floor plans, open office environments
are bad for HSPs.
May not be so great.
Yeah.
So like maybe you need to go sit in one of the conference rooms for a couple hours at a time and, you know, work in there. Maybe clutter. Gala just told us this 2 weeks ago. But like clutter for an HSP is really overwhelming. So making sure your space feels clean and pristine so that you're not taking in all the energy of that clutter. So just trying to manage your environment in ways you can without, you know, over trying to control it. The third thing, and we're going to learn this again when Dr. Ellen Bora comes on, but the box breath or the 4-7-8 breath, just practicing your breathing. So this is where you breathe in for 4 seconds, you hold your breath for 7, and then you exhale slowly for 8 seconds. This, again, doing that 3 times is a signal to your nervous system, I can just come back home to myself and regulate myself here. Did you have a question?
I was just thinking to myself, you know, there are all these practices to regulate your nervous system. And I'm thinking for highly sensitive people, if they're in a state, if they're able, I'm just thinking from like a scientific experiment perspective, if they were able to be in a state where they could keep their nervous system very consistently regulated, would they be better able to tolerate the extra stimuli? Like, would the loud noises not feel as loud if they had the ability to maintain calm in their nervous system?
Just that's curious. A great question. That sounds right. It's sort of like for me, and this is actually the fourth category, which is stress management. Like I know when I exercise in the morning, my ability to remain centered is so different. So or when I meditate, and like I try to meditate when I know I have a lot of sessions so I can clear what's going on in my own head and bring in what my clients need. And stress management is the fourth thing that's recommended if you are overstimulated, which is like, what is the routine? I hate that word so much. What is the thing? Oh God, I hate routine.
What is
the thing you can do that you know proactively will allow you to stay in regulation? Is it getting more sleep or getting enough sleep? Is it meditating? Is it, you know, noticing that when you eat or drink certain things, you're dysregulated? So, you know, doing that. Journaling. All of those things are ways of managing your stress, particularly as an HSP, that can help you feel regulated. Now, if that's a highly sensitive person, and we move now to the left of the spectrum, Bina and I just created, to empath, which is someone who's taking just people's emotions and energies in. Boundaries, baby. Boundaries and empaths have to be like, it's the flip side of the same coin.
Right.
We empaths really believe that just because we can sense someone's emotion, we got to do something about it.
Yeah.
It is none of your business.
And not your job. It's just not your job.
You know what it's like? This is what being an empath is like with boundaries. It's like walking past someone's house, their curtains are open, you're able to see inside, and they're having a fight. And keep on walking.
Right.
Because that is the respectful thing to do with what's happening inside of their inner life.
Right.
When you're an empath and you're sensing someone else's emotion, you're witnessing what's going on. You are able to see what's happening in there.
Right.
But you are not allowed to go in there and fix it.
Right.
It's not appropriate. That's their inner world. Unless they reach out and they ask for assistance, then you can be of assistance. But most of us empaths work so hard to fix things 90% more often than is being requested of us.
Which is exhausting and draining. Oh my gosh.
Yes. So boundaries. Boundary is, this is not about me. Just because I can feel it does not mean it's any of my business. Just because I can feel it does not mean it's my job to fix it. In fact, it's disempowering and it's inappropriate. It is crossing their boundary of their inner life to then engage.
It's now disempowering for the person who is experiencing the emotion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because their difficult emotion is their path to growth. It's a lot of us empaths, though, were born into family systems, parents that were able to utilize our empathness as their own regulation system, as a way to calm themselves down. And so what we learn to do at a very young age is use our superpower to calm our parents or make them feel safe or secure emotionally. I did it with my mom. I see my little ones doing it all the time. And so it's really important to know that let's not be hard on ourselves, that we don't have this boundary. We were trained at a young age not to have the boundary so the parent could be okay so that we could then be safe.
It's sad. That's all I can say. I mean, and okay. I think a lot of parents.
Not done on purpose.
Yeah, agreed. I was going to say, I think parents do it completely unconsciously because they didn't learn proper coping mechanisms or what have you. I don't think it's an intentional, like, hey, kid, you deal with my stuff. I think it's all, a lot of it's just subconscious. And
And that actually in psychology has a term. It's called cognitive appraisal. It means it's our way of interpreting the difference between the internal world and the external world.
Which it must be so challenging as a child.
So
it's
challenging.
So much knowledge and awareness to understand that.
Yeah, which is why I keep saying to my son, who's deeply an empath and navigates things, you know, hey, bud, that's not yours.
Yeah.
It's so amazing you can sense it. I just want you to know you don't have to do anything about it. And I want you to be able to tell the difference.
You were the one who, with my daughter, has explained to me, like, this is her superpower. And I now use that language with her, like, this is your superpower, babe. Like, wow, I can't believe, rather than being like, why are you worrying about that? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Now I say, wow, like, that is amazing that you even picked that up. However, let's leave it where you found it.
Yeah, I will tell you, ever since you've started doing that, her eyes are a little brighter. Like, she's just a little more open. I can see from this part of her eyes, her like third eye, she's just a little more open and not as terrified.
Because I think that experience as a young kid has to be tremendously scary and confusing. Like, what is all of this coming at me? She's not an adult. She doesn't have like the shitty coping mechanisms that we all have to shut it down, right? So it's constant. And I'm very grateful that you have helped illuminate. And my sister's been a really helpful resource because she's taught me a lot about needing the downtime and the quiet and all of these things so that I can best support my daughter.
Yeah. I came from a culture that's all about togetherness all the time.
Yeah.
And so downtime can be seen as selfish. Wow. So I do want to recognize that we've also learned, depending on our backgrounds and our cultures and our family systems, that, you know, needing downtime has been seen as negative.
Right.
But that's just because the culture doesn't understand this. And I really had to learn that it was okay sometimes to just go away and be by myself and enjoy it. I used to feel so guilty when I enjoyed my alone time, and I realized it's because I come from a beautiful collective culture that's like, it together we're better, but the downtime is so important.
And I do want to say that I don't just tell my daughter it's a superpower to like make her feel cool. Like, I truly believe it's a superpower.
It is.
Like, she has a whole heightened awareness about people and her surroundings that a lot of other people don't. It's literally a superpower. I feel like she could use it for good or bad. And I'm really trying to cultivate greatness from it.
It is such an incredible tool to be able to perceive at that level.
Right.
And know and understand what is going on at such a profound level.
Yeah.
If you have boundaries, it really allows you to go further, faster. It allows you to make the things that you want to happen so much more easily. Mm. It allows you to have such deep connection, like deep relationships with people that are so profoundly impactful, because you can get to that level of depth with them.
Right.
And it allows you, again, with boundaries, to not take people's stuff personally, but to be able to just observe it and say, oh, interesting, this person is really sad today and I'm noticing that, and that's okay.
Such a fine line. It's such a fine line you're walking to be like, oh, I'm noticing it, but I'm not doing anything about it. It is really a fine line.
All right. Well, Bean, that's highly sensitive person. That's empath. What is your famous? Here we go.
Insert music here.
Melissa's takeaway. Take us away.
I feel like a lot of this, we kind of were a little redundant and repetitive, but I think a lot of my biggest takeaway from this is how important regulating your nervous system is. I mean, it's really important for empathy sensitive people as well, but keeping your internal self at an even keel is critical for highly sensitive people and beings, more so than the next person. But that all of these methods, whether for you, for highly sensitive people, it's taking downtime and quiet time. For somebody else, regulation might look like, I need to be around my friends right now, not a highly sensitive person. So my biggest takeaway is not necessarily about being highly sensitive, but about how much our nervous systems dictate our lives.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thanks. Well, this has been
interesting.
I feel super healing to be able to talk about it out loud. I hope that you guys learned something about yourselves or someone that you live with or that you love through this and how to support them.
Truly.
And not take their need for alone time personally.
Truly.
And understand that they just need a minute.
And stop telling your kids, nothing's wrong, everything's fine.
Yeah.
Don't tell them about misery in life, but really say, you know, this is what happened, or this is how I'm feeling right now, but I'm going to handle it because I'm an adult.
Yes. Good advice. Thanks. Guys, thank you for listening. If you want to support the show, we would so appreciate if you could leave us a review anywhere you're listening, and also share this show with anyone that you think would be helped by what we talked about today. Thank you all. Bean, I'll see you next week.
Okay. Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted by me, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Grushka. Special thanks to my production team, Anushree Thekadeth, Arman Kassam, and Anais Islami. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode. See you then.